The recording has started. It's going to be a very, very good show. Brief, maybe not the two-hour extravaganza people are used to. And as I mentioned on yesterday's broadcast, we're only doing a couple days this week because of some conflicts in the schedule and research.
Yeah. Yeah.
Research yeah. concepts.
Hey, well, I've got a gig. I've got a gig, so that's probably why.
Dan's got a gig. I got some stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
Fred's very busy with park maintenance.
I'm painting two more Adirondack chairs today.
I love that.
That's what I'm up to.
Which car? Which ones? I thought you all got all...
The two red ones down by the lake.
Oh, what color are they going? Red again?
No, blue.
Hey, Fred,
oh,
man.
Oh, it's all blue.
Sorry, Dan. Freddie, can you do something with your volume? Because all of a sudden it dropped down again. Why is that, Dan? Why would his volume be so good until I hit record?
I don't know. Maybe it's some...
a Zoom setting back, or something?
A loop, you know, Zoom thing.
Yeah. Freddie, you're painting Adirondack. Now, so you guys call them Adirondack chairs, but not Muskoka chairs.
Well, because we're in the Kawarthas. Why would we call them Muskoka chairs? I would rather... I don't want to give credit to Muskoka because it's so pretentious and, you know, snooty that I'd rather call them Adirondack chairs.
Okay. Well, I've just had to boost your gain there quite a bit. Dan, go ahead and talk.
Well, I'll speak to you from my site, which is very near Fred's.
Just a tiny little bit, Dan.
Yeah. Okay. So Fred goes up.
Fred goes up, you go down. Hey, Dan.
Howard.
Are you part of this Bloods and Crips Muskoka feud?
You know, I haven't really done the same thing that Fred has. I call them Muskoka chairs.
Mm.
Some people call them Kawartha chairs. I don't know what the actual design is. It is.
I think Fred. Anyway. I think Fred's right. Yeah. I think the actual name is Adirondack, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the Adirondacks, I think, is that's New York State, isn't it? The Adirondacks.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's also a style of chair that is attached to the name. I don't know the exact, like the arm width or something. We should do some research on that.
All I know is the sound of your voice when Fred said he was going to paint chairs. You got very, very excited.
Well, yeah, because I thought he was painting the last couple of days. He's been going crazy over here with blue periwinkle over to kind of a deep, rich blue with his picnic table and stuff. I didn't realize that the red chairs were up for a painting. Ooh, it's exciting over here.
Wow.
Bought a new picnic table and assembled it. And then my sweet wife, she sanded it down and then painted it a deep sort of cool blue. And then I had to freshen up the periwinkle Adirondack chairs up here on the patio. So
for outdoor paint,
very busy.
For outdoor paint, you use an oil-based or a...
No.
No?
I never use oil-based. No.
But oh, no, I'm asking. Like, I don't... What preserves it against the elements?
Well, it's a stain paint. So I, for example, on, what's today, Tuesday? So on Sunday, we painted the tables. It dries pretty quick because it's a latex base. And then overnight, it rained really hard. And in the morning, when you looked out, the rain had actually beaded on top of the chairs and the table. It had given the protection that quickly.
Nice. Well, very good,
again,
guys.
It's a stain. If a latex that you would put on the walls in your house would not stand up. As, again, I will say stain paint.
All right. Well, we've learned quite a bit in the first 3 minutes and 45. Pardon me?
Accept it.
Yes. Yes, I will. All right. It's very aggressive. Accept it. All right, level-headed Fred. Listen, we're... Just before we hit the Dan Duran theme, I got to share something with Dan and you too, because you've been to this place in New Orleans. And Charlie was there for a bachelorette party all weekend. And on Sunday night, she came home and picked up Booby Billy, my grand puppy, and gave me a Father's Day present. And for you people who are keeping track, I'm wearing this same T-shirt 2 days in a row because I only wore it yesterday morning during the show. So she bought me this T-shirt. It's kind of cool, Tabasco, whatever. And she bought, Daniel loved it, she bought me Café du Monde decaf coffee.
No way. They make a decaf?
Yes, dude.
I did not know.
If you're here in the next week or so, because I want you to taste it. It's been a long time since I've had this coffee. It's really good.
And that's a hickory-based coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it?
What's that, Freddie? Yeah.
You were gracious enough once to buy me a can, but I don't get it. I don't like it that much.
Yeah, it's a bit. It's a bit of a bitter. It's definitely got a bit of an edge to it. But then so do I, Fred. So do I.
Yes, I know. Hey, Howie.
Yeah, man.
Speaking of New Orleans, yesterday we were talking, and I kept meaning to say it, and I'll quickly throw it out, because I think we got an email that sort of touched on, you know, this. The cemeteries in New Orleans all above the ground, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it.
And they're all like crypts, and, you know, and it's fascinating. I mean, you talk about walking around cemeteries for, you know, a hobby or, you know, to pass the time. In New Orleans, it's just unbelievable. And a lot of them are cracked open and trying to peer inside. And with some of the dates on those things, it's just wild. And then, you know, during, you know, what would the big hurricane they had there?
Katrina.
Katrina, whatever
it was. They had some floaters.
They had, yeah, there was some big issues with it, so...
Say,
yeah,
if
you're ever in New Orleans, you've got to go to a cemetery.
No, I have done it. I was going to say, and also in Boston, there's an area of Boston with some famous cemeteries, same famous people buried. It's like right in the middle of this kind of cool area. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Dan, I just want you to know that I'll try and save some for you because it, you know, I've been sampling different decaf coffees, and I use that, what's that one I like? The coffee, not the coffee tree, the...
The Kicking Horse.
Kicking Horse. They do a great job. I'm trying
about
to
get... I got a half decaf, half full calf from them. They call it Half Moon now.
Is that what that is?
That's what Half Moon
is. Yeah, it's very good. So here's what
it was called Half Ass.
Oh, Half Ass, right. No, Half Moon. Half Ass. You're right.
Oh, it is Half Ass. I thought Freddie was being funny.
Yeah. No, he was so excited the other day when he showed it to me. And he said, look at the name, Half Ass. Isn't that clever? And I said, yeah, that's pretty cool. Half Ass. And then you forgot that quick. See, we're all getting old, Dan.
Dan, I need you to turn down a little bit because I don't know. We did a mic check like seconds before I hit record. And the Fred man was perfect. And now I'm like boosting his gain. Anyway, let's not play around any longer. And again, thanks everyone for helping me out by starting early. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Toronto. From our Kawartha's Lakeside facility with a newly painted picnic table and Adirondack chairs. And from the trailer next door with a Danis Duranis bust. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Jeff Lewis Zoom Theater. And brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now, here are two men who don't want to miss the boat on the whole heat dome thing, so are working on a new product, the Heat Dome Dome. The Heat Dome Dome comes in all the fashionable colors and has its own carrying case. It's the very inventive Humble and Fred.
Thank you, Dan Duran. Dan has turned the intro to the show into his own personal show. I love that. 900 kilometers, Fred. That's the length of a fault line spanning Vancouver Island to California. That new research suggests is most likely to produce a major earthquake / tsunami combo, better known as the big one, or as scientists refer to it, the Dan Duran. That's right. Scientists are saying, oh my God, this fault line, are we going to have a Dan Duran? And
so
all the other
saying?
Scientists know what they're talking about. What's that, pal?
So what are they saying about it? Like,
well, they're saying
they discovered the fault line.
That the fault line is 900 kilometers long is what they're saying.
And this obviously has the potential for disaster, much like the ones that run through California.
It is running through California from Vancouver Island to California. Okay. In other Western Canada news, I know my brothers. I'm sorry, did you have something else to add to that?
No, I was saying, so yeah, so they've so the story is, it's they've discovered this in Canada,
yes,
running all the way up. Okay, wow.
It's, yeah. And the major story is the tsunami part, because yeah, the tsunami,
yes,
like, you know, in any of the like in Thailand or whatever, the tsunamis down in that area, the massive, you've seen the documentaries on it.
Yes.
Same thing could happen, and in Japan as well. Same thing could happen off the west coast of North America, and it would be massive, and there's not a lot of protection from it where and the areas they could hit.
You know, the tsunami, that big one that hit, I guess, the Thailand years ago. I mean, that was a horrible tragedy, but some of that footage is just fascinating. You know, when it comes through.
Yeah, you know what I find fascinating about it?
Without notice, really?
Yeah. Well, what's fascinating is, well, there's two things, really. One is, I've seen those. I've seen the footage, and it almost seems like it's, like, for a bit there, it's like, it's not that big a deal. It's like, it doesn't seem that big a deal until until all the water surges.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, do we really need the tea? Can't we just, why do we need the tea into tsunami? Why not just tsunami? S-U-N-A-M-I. Let's, yeah. It's 2024. I've got no time for the tea.
Well, someday I'll sit you down and tell, you know, explain to you there are different languages throughout the world and different ways they use the alphabet in those languages, that type of thing.
You know, I just, you know what? I just had a vision of me sitting on that couch in your trailer and you with a whiteboard going, okay, Howie, now pay attention. Okay, yeah. Howie, pay attention.
In this part of the world.
And, yeah, and then you're looking at me and I go to grab like a carrot stick with some dip and you're like, not yet. You're not getting a snack until you understand why the tea... but I was going to say, in other Western Canada news, both of my brothers...
Wait a minute, are you going to get rid of the PH, too?
In what?
Well, you know, PH in Canada, you know, or in English. That's a sound, so that should be
what I have. Did you say, you said the PH in Canada? What is wrong? Are you having a stroke?
PH in English.
Anyway. No, in this particular case, by the way, Dan, it's a case-by-case situation.
For me. I see, you're still
right now,
fine
I'm just dealing with tsunami. Which is okay. The most useless tea in the English language. My brothers would be mad at me if we didn't at least touch on the fact that Calgary has declared a state of emergency. Dan, are you aware of this? Fred, I'm sure you are. But Dan, I don't know. Your head's in the clouds most days.
Is that the one with the big feeder pipe? I thought they fixed that finally.
They thought they fixed it.
Oh,
but,
no.
But a major water main break... Not as apparently much like the one that flooded my place here last November. The officials say that an assessment revealed that five more hot spots require fixing, and they've got a bunch of private contractors. They say it's going to take 3 to 5 weeks. So they're rationing water in the city of Calgary, Alberta. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great display of human nature, too, because I think they have bylaw officers out. There are people that still are watering their lawns and using water excessively when they've been asked not to. And really, for the most part, people have all bought in. But a couple of articles I read, it was having problems with people still being excessive with their water. Being selfish is actually what they're doing.
Yeah.
But this is a great community pull together story, but at the same time, scary.
One of the, I would say, fascinating, because interesting is overused, is that the state of local emergency isn't linked to the level of water in their reservoirs. It's the state of emergency is to, as you say, ensure that people are aware to ration and not do excessive watering. You know, one of the most excessive uses of water that we do as human beings, and I know we all do it, and it's not, it's a funny little quirky thing. I think we all do. It's when you brush your teeth,
yeah,
do you leave the water running while you're brushing it?
Probably.
A lot of people do. I do. Mm-hmm. And I can't, you know, and I catch myself. I'm like, turn the water off. Dan, do you brush your teeth? I know you don't use deodorant.
Right. No, I brush my teeth.
Okay.
I have an electric toothbrush at home. And then when I'm doing that, I don't have the water running because I like to walk around. But when I'm here at the lake, I use the manual one and I forget to turn it off because it's just, you know, I'm just right there, ready to go.
But Howard, don't beat yourself up because you conserve water by shitting in the shower. So
that's two uses in one.
That's right.
Yeah, you killed two. You killed two birds with one stone.
One, and by the way, I also shave and brush my teeth in the shower, so it's a full service. Anyway, so there you go. If you're heading, and then one of their concerns is that this is that they got to figure this out prior to Stampede. Some of the pushback on social media is, you know, you've got some of the biggest oil companies on planet Earth. You think they would be able to call those guys in to figure out how to fix a big pipe?
You know, again, it's the sign of the times. The huge issue still in Toronto is, why is it taking so long to rehabilitate the Gardiner Expressway?
Oh, yeah.
Decades ago, so many of these construction jobs and these things that needed to be done were done a lot quicker for whatever reason. You know, I guess maybe workers were expected to work longer and harder, whatever it was. And that's the thing with Calgary as well. And part of what I was reading yesterday, you know, they're saying any city across Canada could potentially be in this situation. And again, a major water main break, you would think, oh, okay, well, that's not a big deal. A couple of days and we'll be good to go. This mm-hmm. thing has just gone on and on and on.
You think they would have built a redundancy? And I was talking with this about Lisa, this with Lisa yesterday. If you got one main line, wouldn't you want to have like another line next to it? So you, if it breaks, you've got the, because you're, you know, digging the hole for the pipeline anyway. Why wouldn't you put two in, and then you don't have so much?
Well, you know why.
Reliance on one list because of money.
Why is that?
Yeah, because at the time it would cost twice as much, so they wouldn't be twice as much if the hole was already there. But that's what it always comes down to.
The mayor of Calgary has suggested some, you know, water reduction ideas, limiting the amount of, obviously, you know, limiting the amount of watering, they maybe no shaving, capturing rainwater in kiddie pools. She says the truth of the matter is, if every household in Calgary did one less toilet flush per day, they would save 12 million liters of water. Maybe the workaround we suggest is what you just said about me. Everyone just go in the shower, and that's where you do your toities. anyway, that's Gross. That's the latest on the city of Calgary's water shortage.
On the subject of toilets, though, if you have an update to your toilet, it is pretty dramatic. If you look at an old toilet, you know, and the tank fills up for one flush,
mm-hmm.
and then the ones they build now, especially the push-button ones where you have the small flush for pee and the big one for poop, over a year, that could be pretty dramatic if everybody had one of those. I mean, the one I have, when it's working properly, the small flush hardly uses any water. Like, because you don't need a huge flush. That guy has a, you know, you have a pee. You don't need, like, a whole tank of water to flush it away.
When you guys are up north, though, don't you just, you know, go pee-pee outside? Like, outdoorsman?
Mm-hmm. When you can. I do.
Yeah, Dan, do you... Well, Dan, when you're taking your nude baths... Do you pee while you're in there, or maybe the odd time you
don't
let
you,
a little?
Don't you take nude baths? I don't know what you.
No, I meant when you're in the lake, you do your nude.
Oh,
bathing.
Oh, right, yeah, no, I yeah, that's funny. Road occasionally.
What's that?
When you take nude baths,
when like you take your weird. Nude baths, and I meant, you know, in the lake when you take your nude lake baths.
Well, you have baths in your bathing suit, Howard. Yeah.
I meant, all I left out of that sentence was lake. You know how he goes diving in there nude?
I know, Howie.
Speaking of which, I was coming back from a... where the hell was I? Oh, I was at... I went to visit Ralph Ben-Murgi on the weekend. On Sunday, he's been hosting a show on some local network out there, Burlington, Hamilton, for the last 6 years, actually, called Spark, where he interviews people about... You know, whatever. Anyway, I was out there in Hamilton, and as I was coming back into the city, I passed this, and I must have passed this sign hundreds of times. And, but I had to, as soon as I got home, I wrote it down. It's a sign that's advertising the Ponderosa, four words, Ponderosa Family Nudist Resort. And all the way home, I was thinking, well, first of all, there's nobody who was on the Ponderosa that I want to see naked. You know, there's Paw.
No.
There's, who are the guys? There's Paw. There's Hoss. And
Little Joe.
Little Joe.
Hop Sing.
And then the brother, Adam, who, the stand-up joke for a long time about Adam and his dad was, Adam was older than his father, which was weird. And Hop Sing, of course, as you mentioned. But then again, then, so you have the Ponderosa part, then family nudist. I don't know if family nudist, it always strikes me as a bit odd. I know, maybe we're uptight. Maybe we're the problem. But apparently, I guess a lot of families go nuding together at the family nudist resort. And I guess if you introduced your kids to that concept like very early, it would never seem odd. I just know from me and my little family, you know, I'm being honest, I just could not see Randy and I and the girls nuding it up on the weekends over at the Ponderosa.
No, there used to be one out near Guelph called the Four Seasons, too. I don't know whatever happened to it. It's a weird, I know, it's a weird concept. And even if you went with the best of intentions, like this whole nudism thing, I don't get it. I mean, especially bathing suits now are just so light and airy, and what's the big deal? Throwing on a bathing suit. But would you really want to take your, like, 10-year-old daughter into that environment? Like, you don't know who these other people are.
Well, but like I said, I think they probably, for a lot of people, they probably introduce it to the kids early. I don't have the information in front of me. I'm just telling you.
I don't want some old 50-year-old guy leering at my 10-year-old daughter. Like, what's the, like, I don't know what the point of it all is.
I don't think the point,
by
the
way. Like an adult nudist camp, great.
Yes.
That's great.
Nude it up.
You bring the kids into it? I don't know.
But I don't think the nudism or nudist movement was predicated on the fact that the bathing suits were too bulky. I don't think that's why they started doing it. It's like, oh, these bathing suits are so binding. I need to have my junk free.
Well, often when you hear these nudists talk, they talk about the freedom. Oh, the freedom. Just feels so free and easy. And the weird thing is, like, all these old guys playing, like, volleyball in the nude.
Yeah, yeah.
And their balls bouncing off their forehead, and like, who needs that?
By the way, when do you hear nudists? When are you overhearing nudists to conversations?
Oh, just, I don't know. I've read about it.
All right.
You know, articles, whatever.
Well, as much as I'd like to take a good long time to explore the world of, well, Dan, you're, again, partly a nudist. You love to do your nude lake bathing, you know?
Yes, some call it naturism.
Naturism, right. Yeah. Being nature, back nature, to the way original men and women roamed the earth. Dan Durant
will come back. When you lived in Vancouver, you never went down to
Wreck Beach?
When you lived in Vancouver,
Yeah, of course I did. I've never gone onto it naked, but I know where it is. I've been to Wreck Beach adjacent, trying to spot boobs.
One of the creepy people off the
side. One of the boob spotters. All right, we got to go, Dan. Dan, come back right after Lumbee. Did you have any final thoughts about nudism?
Yeah, years and years ago, back in the 80s, before I started working with you, I went to Jamaica for a weekend with Peter Griffin of Pete and Geets, and where we were staying, there was a nude beach just down a little bit, and him and I walked through the woods, like, you know, the thick woods and everything, really uncomfortable, so we could sit there and peer out at the nudists on the beach. That was my only association with it. It was fun.
You know, to your point about bathing suits, I took Dan when he was visiting me in Mexico and a couple other. I took the kids to this area, too. Chetumal. And on the beach there were a lot of younger people than where I was staying. And, you know, the bathing suits, you're virtually seeing everything anyway. They're virtually naked. There's only a little strip that covers the bottom. There's side boobs and such hanging out. They might as well be naked. They were certainly naked in my mind. Hey, Freddie, let's get some business done here before we do some emails. And then, of course, our buddy Lumbee's going to join us in about 20 minutes.
Hey, you know, Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. If you have a portfolio, you would like someone to have a second look at it just to see if you're on track, you know, another perspective. Sherpa Tim or Sherpa Jay will have a look and give you the straight goods. Are you on track? Are you not on track? What you should do, stick with the guy you're with or the woman you're with, or come on over to the Sherpa side. Standing offer, and a lot of Humble and Fred listeners have done it, and now a lot of Humble and Fred listeners are part of, you know, the Sherpa organization, so to speak. So the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca.
You know, I haven't had a chance to talk about these guys for a while, but there was a time that I was very familiar with the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, chamberplan.ca. It's simple, it's stable, it's smart. The plan, as you have pointed out, has been protecting Canadians for over 40 years. It's not for profit, so that they try and keep the renewables and the rates down. And they are, it's quite a going concern. I've had the opportunity on several occasions, most recently in May, I was with a bunch of advisors talking about the Chamber Plan at their annual dinner. And I'm telling you, there's a reason so many people opt in is because for small businesses, there's no better way. And if you want to find out more about it, we encourage you to go and check it out yourselves. We've been a member of this plan now going on 7 years. And it has been of great benefit for us. If you are already with a plan, check this one out. If you haven't got one for your small business because you don't think you can afford it, well, we can tell you, as a small business, it's very affordable. Chamber Plan at chamberplan.ca. All right, so let's get to our emails today. Even though we've only done a couple shows, a lot of the reaction is... Well, you're all going to see in a second a lot of the reaction from stuff we've talked about. You have everything in front of you?
That you yes.
Need? All right.
Yes.
Yes. So, like, you and Pete went through the woods to see if you could see.
We crouched in the woods, like, moving leaves apart to look out at the nudists. And, of course, Delise and his wife, Claire, wanted no part of it, but.
Gee, I wonder why.
It was fun for us.
Now I know why you'd be so nervous about having, you know, one of your kids at a nude beach, because guys like you and I would be. No, I get it. Exactly. It's a good point.
And Pete was great with the one-liners, so yeah, hearing him describe things was something I'll never forget. That's the late Pete Griffin.
Yeah, very, very good. And a shame that Pete and Geets are not in the Hall of Fame, which is really blocking our entry into the Radio Hall of Fame. But that's a whole other show. In the meantime, Freddie.
That's a joke.
Okay. In the meantime, let's get started.
Okay, subject matter, cemeteries. This is from Gord. Hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Listening to your conversation on how long they keep bodies in a cemetery reminded me of visiting the catacombs of Paris. There they dealt with overcrowded cemeteries in the 18th century by taking the remains and transporting the bones to underground caverns. It is fascinating to visit the caverns of stacked up bones, but becomes a bit boring after walking kilometers of bones from the millions of dead. Perhaps that's the future for Toronto. And you know what, Gordy? It very well could be.
Yeah.
Gord says, stay strong.
By the way, I didn't send you that Gord. That came in as a late entry, so just eliminate one of the ones I did send you.
Okay.
No worries. Just I was looking around like, where'd that? Oh, that's in the main body. That's fine. Thank you, Gord. Appreciate you.
Hi, guys.
This subject line is missing in Mexico. And it's from John Dugan. He says, hi, hombres.
Hi, guys.
Was wondering what happened to the lovely Julieta that Howard was courting. I thought by introducing her to Fred and Dahl last summer that nuptials were pending. Will they be meeting the new dancing queen? That's very funny, actually. I just quickly, I'll say, John, lovely, had a great time with her. She's amazing. We sort of saw each other for most of the winter. And then when I came back here, we sort of agreed that, hey, we'll just be friends. You know, that kind of thing. As far as the new dancing queen, you know what? Listen, I guess everything's on the table. I took her to a party on our third date. How if she could do that, she could easily handle the trailer. He goes on to say, Dan may be hung like a meat locker, but his lack of sports knowledge makes him a shriveled up raisin. Good luck explaining why they are playing a sport on ice in 50-degree Humidex tonight in Florida. Heartbeat, meh. Bowel movements, not as good as Howard in the shower. All right. Stay as cool as always, John Duggan. Thanks, John.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Subject matter here is dads from Richard Bullis.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Just listening to you three talk about your dads, it got me thinking about my dad. He passed on 3 years ago. He was a great guy, and I was lucky to have him as a father. Listening to you guys talk so lovingly about your dads was really nice to hear. I'm not trying to be Sammy Maudlin here, but you guys are the real deal. It makes me even more glad I'm a fan of the show. Cheers to your dads and my dad, Barry. All the best, fellas. Rich. That's nice.
That is nice. You know, every once in a while, things can just be nice, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I know they can.
You know, our whole program doesn't have to be, oh, I took a poo in the shower, I mean.
No, not at all.
We have other capacities. That's great, Rich. Thanks for, I'm glad and all that stuff. Okay,
hi,
so here we go. This is from... Anthony Bastone, or Anthony Bastoni, subject line, death for infinity. Of course he says, hi guys, he's on an animal.
Hi guys.
Listening to your discussion about how long dead people stay in cemeteries, what's more thought-provoking are mausoleums. Did Gordon mention mausoleums or mausoleums? He says, here we have buildings full of dead people in slots. Are these structures supposed to last forever? We're talking hundreds or thousands of bodies in buildings that will eventually crumble to the ground. It's all very thought-provoking. Yours truly, Hundy P since 2013, resting heart rate 70, bowel movements regular, but room for improvement. And that kind of goes along. What's that, sir?
Yeah, we all kind of relate to that.
Which part, the room for improvement?
Always room for improvement. Jeez.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is all began because I was telling you about my bike ride around the cemetery, and I think these mausoleums, that's an interesting point. What happens to those? Like, I would, you know, again, our buddy Brad from Ridley Funeral Home is going to be on soon, and I really want to talk about like, what are there, like, term limits? I think you said that. And like, what happens? Like, do you buy a slot in a mausoleum or mausoleum? Is it a term of 100 years? Is it just until the building crumbles, as Anthony says?
I can't answer that question. I just refer back to New Orleans. A lot of them are still standing there after decades upon decades.
Although some of those are like hundreds of years old.
Oh, yeah, and you can't even read the writing anymore. It's been so sort of washed away by the weather.
All right.
Crazy.
All right, well then, moving on, Fred Mann.
Hi, guys.
The subject matter here is Humble and Fred / Raymond James Golf Clinic. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
In fact, this is Hi, J. Howard Tim, actually. Thanks for Friday's session. Nice location, great group of people. Howard, I really liked your guidance and how you honed one easy concept that was easy to understand and delivered results. Jay's explanation on how to read greens was something my brain could manage and hopefully put in practice. I've been a loyal listener since the beginning of CFNY and got into the podcast a week or so after it started. Wow. I love the combination, get this, of intelligence, humor, and, importantly, stupidity.
That's intelligence, humor, and stupidity. That really should be on our business cards.
Yes. Now, connecting with Tim and his team over 5 years ago has been the best financial decision we've made.
Wow.
To actually hear your advisor every week is comforting in an odd way. All our interactions with Jay and Tim are great, informative, reassuring, never a sales pitch, okay, as opposed to some other situations. Here's to hoping this becomes an annual event, the golf thing. This is from Vince. Thank you, Vince.
Yeah, Vincent Henney, a very nice man. And it's interesting because I love how he describes us intelligent, humorous, and stupid, and them great, informative, and reassuring. It's quite a combo. Quite the combo. Well, Vincent, I'd be happy to do it annually. It was kind of fun. It was more than kind of fun. Our buddy Earl Veal was there.
Oh, good Earl.
Good Earl, Early Veal. And It was just fun hanging out with everybody. Stephen Lewis, I mentioned I ran. We met him. He's been emailing us forever. And you see this thing I have in my wrist?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Lewis, man. What a great guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened, though. When we first met, he shook my hand, squeezed it so much. Like, he's a big man. And yesterday, about halfway through the round, I'm like, why is my fucking wrist bugging me? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I shook hands with a real man. Anyway, it was a great event, and thanks to everyone at Raymond James and the team there. In the meantime, let's move on.
Hi, guys.
This is from Neil Brown. The subject is polarization. And, of course, he says,
hi, guys.
Been catching up with the cast this weekend, and something you said about polarization never being like it is nowadays got me thinking about something my dad used to talk about. And Neil, for context, says, I'm in my early 50s. And remember my father constantly saying how much he hated Trudeau, the original one, Trudeau Senior, and how he was responsible for the majority of problems in Canada. Since it was before my time, I was wondering if polarization was bad during that time. Then he signs it by saying, keeping the shower clean since 72. You know, and what I wanted to say, because you and I were discussing this, And I mentioned that I think that because of we both have said this, but the other day I was saying, you know, social media has made polarization worse than ever because it's no longer about issues. It's about, you know, teams and tribals.
Yes.
And I think in the times of what he's talking about, our parents' time, you could have an opinion about Trudeau and say, oh, I hate that guy, but you wouldn't put a fuck Trudeau sign. You wouldn't think of doing that. Because you would, even though you didn't like the man or his policies, you would still respect that he was the prime minister of your country.
Yeah, and just wait for voting day, right? And the only audience you would have would be the people you were in the room with. You couldn't lash out on social media and become part of a group and get that snowball rolling, you know? Yeah, completely different. No, polarization is... I think it's a relatively new phenomenon, generally.
Well, I think that's a good add-on to the point that I'm making, which is you could not like the prime minister or your local mayor or whoever. You could not like them.
Yeah.
But because there was a sort of, I don't know, we were young and in the world and there was a built-in respect for somebody. Like, I don't get... When I see somebody who's got like a fuck Trudeau sign in their truck or something, and I was like, I instantly know who that person is now. They don't like, they're anti-vaxxers. Like you can just sort of go down a laundry list of who they are. They think Trump's cool.
And I think what's added to the polarization, the main point is, as you say, through social media, all the misinformation or disinformation. People get riled up over things that aren't even true.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what scares me more than anything. And then people, you know, beat a drum and go on social media and claim that, you know, they are telling the truth when they're either stupid or they know they aren't. They're just doing it as a means to promote their side.
Absolutely.
It's all ugly.
Yeah, another great point, too, that it's like we can't even agree on a set of, you know, common truths.
Yeah.
Like... Again, not to segue into Trump, but I thought about this the other day, and the sheer volume of stuff that comes out of his mouth that's not true, but accepted by the people on the team he represents, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Or even people you know that they may post something, you know it's wrong, you can prove it's wrong. But they haven't even taken the time to find out if it's wrong. It's just part of their narrative, so they let it roll. Like, how do you battle that? And if it's like that now, what's it going to be like 5-10 years from now?
Well, there is a bit of light, I think, around social media. Well, I was going to say, Ontario, a while back, has proposed to ban cell phone use in schools. Alberta just followed.
Yeah.
All the way to grade 12.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of people like trying to limit your access to that stuff. as you have to social media, I think is, I think there will be a bit of backlash, and it's just seen, I think, will be seen as healthier. Let's wrap it up here. We got a couple more.
Hi, Freddie. Hi, guys.
Subject matter, back to the shower incident.
Oh, boy. How much fun this is.
It's from Ed Weber.
Oh,
and he says, hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Howard, no need for embarrassment over your explosive shower incident. If anything, you've started your way to a handy time saver.
Sharted, he said, not started.
All right, you've sharted. Oh, you've sharted your way to a handy time saver. Throw in a waterproof electric razor, and you can do your morning shit, shower, and shave all at once. Have a great weekend, guys. Ed.
Okay.
Yeah, that goes back to what we were saying earlier in the show. Yeah, you're conserving water.
Exactly. I'm more of an environmentalist than the rest of you. This is from Tanya Hutton, who often contributes. She represents, I think, a lot of people. Her subject line, poop emergency, is what she says. I'm in the middle of the Howard shit himself in the shower story. And this is fucking gold from Tanya. She says, I'm in the middle of the story, and this is fucking gold. I'm dying. And Fred, she says, seems pretty, pretty judgy for a dude who shit the bed in the DR. And I forgot all about that while you were giving me crap. Nobody did it. About my incident. I was like, thank you, Tanya. Fred seemed, you did seem a little bit judgy, and I wish I had remembered you
in
had.
In what way? In what way?
I'm sorry.
What way did I see?
Just in the regular way that we both judge one another for humorous purposes. I just wish, I wanted to write her back and say, Tanya, man, I just wish I had remembered that he had to change the sheets in the DR, man.
Dahl did.
Oh, my God.
Now I know.
That's who we are. That's who we are now.
No, I know. I can relate to that. I mean, just that push getting up off the bed when I was in trouble. Out she came. Not good.
Oh, man. You should probably, I think, you do you not have one left?
Yes, it's very short.
All right.
Hi, guys.
Who's it from?
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Subject matter, shower poop. Here we go again.
Wow.
It's email. Andrew.
Our old buddy Andrew Moore from
that's right,
service Andrew inspired Moore. Restaurants. Yeah,
he says doctor, not hi guys. So
hi
doctor.
Guys.
The correct terminology for stomping one's poo down the shower drain is called waffle stomp.
Oh, nice.
Now I've never heard of that before.
Neither have I.
Because on the day that you presented the story, I said, did you heel it down the drain?
Yes.
And there's, you know, like anything else, there's a term for it, and it's a waffle stomp. Good to know, Andrew. Thank you very much, buddy.
Well, as you can see, and this is just represents a small cross-section of the listeners who found that story relatable, who found it fascinating. And and it would have just made it a little bit better if I could remember that you soiled the sheets whilst on vacation.
Yeah, I did. Oh, that was an awful moment.
I bet.
Well, because it's your sweet wife and she loves you and she knows you, and ultimately she did change the sheets, but it's embarrassing at that moment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, what can I do to hide this from my love? And I couldn't.
Oh, that is great. All right, speaking of great, let's get, hang on a second, why isn't this not playing? Should be playing, stand by.
Music, please, can we have some music?
Oh, there we go.
Oh!
This is one of those songs, I guarantee both Jeff and I, separately and together, had contests to see who could hit the post on this vocal, because it's long, you know, it goes on, we could be doing the weather.
1977! And here's a beautiful track from the Australian band Plair and Baby Come Back.
There's the first post. Well, that's all for me. Thank you, Saskatchewan. My very good friend Jeff Lumby will be coming up with some of his favorite moments from the last year. Here's Plair on CHAB. Ah, fucking what?
Trumped it! Huh? You
Yes, I know. I stomped it. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the host of the much heralded Jeff and Julie Moved to France in a Global Pandemic. And joins us occasionally to check in and tell us on the state of the world. We got a lot of stuff.
It is great to be here.
Good to have you. And I thought of you yesterday. We were talking about Father's Day, and I know this wasn't on your notes, but I thought you'd have a good answer for this, because Fred and I and Dan were talking about what we learned from our fathers. And I was around your dad quite a bit when I first met you, and I've, of course, known him for many years after. And actually, one of my favorite memories of your father, John, was when my dad and you and I and John went golfing.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah, a very, very sweet time. So what was the question, Fred? What did we learn from our dads, or what?
Yes, what did you learn from your fathers that you've carried with you?
Yeah.
You know what? I got to say, from, you know, from both my parents, because they really instilled independence in me. I mean, they were just the opposite of the bubble wrap, you know, parenting that's going on today. You know, we had an island up in northern Saskatchewan, and I would be 12 years old going out at 5:30 in the morning by myself in a canoe fishing. And I learned from my dad to grab a hold of life and accept the adventures that it offers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if people know this, because you were a guide. Were you not a guide for a while?
Yeah. I was a fishing guide up there at 16 years old. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
That
was way north. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. That was like all the Precambrian rock that you see up in the Kawarthas and Muskokas is present in the northern half of Saskatchewan, north of Prince Albert. And we were 5 hours north of Saskatoon. And so, you know, we were up in the wilderness. It took 40 minutes to boat to our island, and we were self-sufficient. My dad, you know, had power and water running out there and everything. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. The best childhood anyone could ask for.
So how power what? With a generator?
Yeah. He had an Onan generator, I remember. And
wow.
Yeah. he brought all of the supplies over in the winter on the ice and left them on the island. And then he and his buddies came up with many, many cases of beer and built the cottage in the summer.
Wow. Yeah. I'll tell you, that's ambitious. You use the word independence. Do you think this, you know, later in life, as we become conditioned to things, this might help explain how someone makes the decision to move to France? You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine that,
you know,
doing what you did, right?
Fred, it all comes from that, and it's all a result of that. And they instilled that at an early age. And, you know, my mom was sad when I left home at 17, probably the same with your mom, Howard, because I know you were gone early too. But, I mean, I was 17 and working in radio in Lloydminster, and I'm sure she was sad. But, I mean, she built those blocks for me and my dad. So they had themselves to blame, and no one could be happier with their life than me because of all that.
I know both your parents, and I also know your brother and sister, and the whole family's kind of got a similar independent vibe, but a real strong sense of family. Like I said, I knew your dad early on, and then as we all got older, just always such a sweet dude. So you've moved to France. We've established that fact.
Yeah.
And the last time we talked, we're going to get to some Olympic stuff, but for you people, some context. Jeff was a pretty decent ball player. I'm not talking softball, slow pitch. I'm talking baseball, hardball. Guys are throwing it. At this level, you know, I had this conversation with Jeff Freddy a couple days ago. There are young guys on Jeff's team that are throwing it in the high 80s. High 80s.
Yeah.
Like this was, like I said to him, you know, and 30 years ago, they'd be in the major leagues. So you've been playing some baseball there in France, which is kind of cool. You've joined a community of French baseball players.
And you're doing it
in French.
Yeah, that's the difficult part, and I'm 173 years old is another issue.
That's right.
But you know what? We had our semifinals last week, not this past weekend, and we won both games. They were pretty tight, but we won both games to advance to the final. And a funny story from, so the way it works is, and there's no real other way of doing it. They, through the season, you have timed games and you finish an inning. In other words, you always play to the bottom of the inning so that both teams have an equal, but after a certain time, and it's 90 minutes, then the next, when that inning is over, that's the winner of the game. I know it's for purists, it's not the best, but it really does work here. So in the first game, I didn't play. And then in the second game, I finally got in. And of course, I get up to bat and two very anemic fly balls out. And no plays to me at second base. And then I do get an opportunity to hit and you know, hopefully erase the previous two at-bats. I go up for a third time. Now, the way it works is you can only score a maximum of 5 runs per inning. So we were ahead in the game. We had scored 4, and of course, the bases are loaded, and up comes Lumbee.
When Casey comes to the bat.
Yes. And all of a sudden, the umpire, and I think they all know that I only speak, well, I mean, I speak some French, but that I mainly speak English. And the umpire comes up to me and he says, "You go to first base now." And I said, pardon? "It's a base on ball. You go to first base. It's a walk." What they did was, knowing the maximum 5-run rule, they advanced me to first, because the thing is, if I got a hit, all the runs that would have come in on that hit would have counted
right
over and above the 5 runs.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So they walked me. They were so afraid.
That's right.
Of this 100 hitter. That they intentionally walked me. So I did get an RBI.
So what about the guy behind you, though?
That was it.
Well, no, that's it. It was a maximum of 5 runs. It's okay. Yeah, maximum of 5.
And I like, by the way, as a guy that's an amateur sports psychologist, I like the way you're thinking, because you're reframing it, as we say. What you would tell people now is they pitched around you.
They pitched around me. Exactly.
When Lumbee comes up in that situation, we got to pitch around him.
Mm-hmm. Mark McGuire is coming to the plate. We got to walk that guy.
That's right. With a 100 hitter.
Now that I sit here and think, that was pretty good strategy on there.
It was very good strategy. We used it in the finals, which we lost this weekend to a mighty, mighty team in Montendre, just by Bordeaux. We actually won the middle game. So it did go to a best of 3, and they won the final game soundly. But yeah, it you know what? It's a great team. The kids, and I mean kids, I mean, there's one guy on the team. I just love him. He's just full of joy, piss and vinegar. He's probably 18, 19 years old.
Wow.
And he's kind of my partner. He plays shortstop when I'm playing second. And he speaks a little bit of English. And he comes up to me and he takes a look at my glove, which is a beautiful DNR Canadian-made baseball glove, which I bought in the 80s. And he said, "How old is your glove?" And I thought about it for a minute, and I go, à peu près 42 ans, 42 years old.
Wow.
And he goes, "Oh, wow, twice as old as me."
That's so funny.
And he's the guy who just got his driver's license, you know.
That's great.
So it's 60. Are you 65?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can get around on a fastball that's going over 80 miles an hour? That's remarkable.
Well, I can get around on it, but it'll either, you know what I'm good at, Fred, is I can still field ground balls, hard ground balls. That's my forte. I'm a very good fielder. In terms of running, that's obviously gone a little south. And then since I haven't played baseball for like 5 years, it's taking me. This is the part, and Howard, you'll relate to this. If you stop golfing, that would be the part of the hitting would be the part
the timing
of the
game. Yeah, your timing. Yeah.
The timing. Yeah. So that's the part that and when you're only being put in the games sort of at the end of the game or in only the second game and you only get 2 at bats, it's kind of tough to groove that swing. But you know what? I'm having a ball. The kids are great. And, you know, the last story I have is kind of funny. You know how every team, you put there's a pep talk and then you all put your hands in the middle. And you go, one, two, three, blah, blah, blah. And for the whole season, I didn't know what the hell they were saying because it's in French, right? So this time, 2 weeks ago, I said, okay, I really have to read some lips here and figure out what they're saying. Because I was just going, one, two, three, blah, you know. but they, what they say, our team is called BCA, Baseball Club of Agenais.
Nice.
But in French, it's BCA. So now I know that it's BCA. And that's what we do when we do our little chant.
That's really funny. Well, you said something a second ago when you were talking about when the kid asked you how old the glove was. You said more or less 42 years. But what was that word? What was the phrase you used?
À peu près.
À peu près. And that kind of, I got the vibe that it meant more or less.
Yes.
So in Spanish, that's más o menos. People would say, they say it all the time. It's like, what time is that? Más o menos, cuarenta. You know what I mean? It's like one of those words in a foreign language that you can use while you're trying to remember the next. I use it all the time. You know what I mean? It's like you kind of go, I'm más o menos. And I'm like, what is that word? Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics. But before I do, I saw this story.
Yes.
And I thought of you again. I saw the story after you and I talked the other day. And I just wondered if it's countrywide or something that is just happening here on the right-wing media. This woman, Candace Owens, who's just another one of those fucking ghouls, is apparently there's a rumor or an internet thing that Macron's wife, the president of France's wife, have you heard this, Fred? That she's trans. Is that a thing that's well-known?
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
No, that's ridiculous. So,
but I'm not saying you heard this?
No, I haven't. But do you know that she used to teach him in public school?
How much older than him is she?
Oh, well, she's 20-plus years older than him.
Like she's maybe a beautiful woman. She's 71 years old.
Yeah, and he's 40... Yeah, so maybe even 30 years older than he is. I'm not sure, but he's a very, very young guy.
So, Freddie, had you heard that story that's going around the right wing? You know who Candace Owens is? She's a terrible person.
Yeah, Candace Owens has made a business of being a black person who says stuff that white racists like to hear come out of the mouth of a black person. She's built her business on that.
Yeah, it's a great business. Crazy. Well, one of the things, she was on Piers Morgan somewhere in the last week or so, and Piers kept saying, well, this is ridiculous. This is insane. Well, is it? And then she keeps mentioning some documentary, some bullshit. Anyway, I just wondered if in France itself you'd ever heard that.
So what's the point?
I don't know what the point is.
Why would it even matter?
That's the other thing. Who cares?
Well, that's what I said while I was watching the interview. I said, well, that's the question. That's what you should be saying, Piers, is what does it matter to you? Why are you going? Why is this such a big issue? But you put it perfectly, Fred. She's saying things that, you know, internet or, you know, right wing media, all that shit. So they love that stuff.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying earlier in the show. The misinformation, disinformation out there is what's causing all the problems. It's not the truth. It's the bullshit.
Well, and again, we go back to that great saying, information versus affirmation. Try and seek that out, you know?
Yeah.
I think she groomed him to be the president. He's a very intelligent guy. He's a fantastic international leader. He's got some domestic issues for sure. He's got big domestic issues. And our department here has voted very much against him recently. And I understand why. He's not friendly to the farmers. He's not friendly. Like, the taxation here and regulation and restrictions are unbelievable.
Can you just explain quickly before we get to the Olympics? So there's an election being called. So in France, you have a president.
Yes, who's elected. He's elected regardless for 5 years. So I think he still has two plus years left on his term. But then there's an assembly, like a parliament.
Right.
And he is in charge of nominating that The prime minister,
right.
Okay, who's in charge of the assembly, which is similar to the parliamentary aspect of Canada.
Okay, got
very
it.
Similar. Okay, so that's parliament. And then those people are elected. So what he's decided to do, he's rolling the dice. He's called an election for parliament because there's just so much fighting right now going on in there, nothing getting done. And if the results of this election, which, by the way, not like Canada, 4 months of this, or the United States, fuck, 3 years worth of campaigning. This is 3 weeks. He gave them 3 weeks. There's a runoff and then a following election for the remaining, because they sort of cull the herd after the first election. And if Le Pen's party wins, in a nutshell, he will be appointing someone from the other party to be the prime minister, which is rare, and it's called cohabitation.
Mm.
And so that's when we will really see the sparks fly, because I think that's what's going to happen, although there have been huge protests from the left over the last few days to the tune of 250,000 people in Paris who are very much against the idea of a right-wing party taking over the second part mm-hmm. of government. Yeah.
Wow.
So the president, how are his powers different than the prime minister underneath him?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're getting into the nuts and bolts of it, okay. But I mean,
well,
you know,
nice.
The president is the president is the president elect. He's got the most power, and then the prime minister, you know, is in charge of the assembly.
Okay.
So the MEPs, right?
So we're just days away. I was watching NBC on the weekend, of course, the U.S. Open, and every third stop set or commercial break was promoting, you know, USA and Team USA at the Paris Olympics. Do you feel any of that in the, I know you live hours from Paris, and that's a stupid question maybe, but do you feel, is there some kind of rumbling going on in the world of your village?
Not so much here, but I mean, you know, right now everyone's kind of excited that the Tour de France is coming through and around the area. So there's that. We're probably bracing for a larger number of Parisians coming down to our area to escape the Olympics.
Does that happen yearly? You get a bunch of people from the city coming to your area?
Oh, yeah. July and August is a nightmare here. And not so much here. But like in the Dordogne area and other regions, oh, for sure, you know, the south of France, you're talking about, you know, Cannes and all that kind of stuff.
The Olympics, 2 points. Number one, a huge industry that has come out of events like the Olympics. A lot of people from Paris will be down in your area because they're renting out their flats and apartments.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
At huge, huge coin. Like, it's unbelievable. I was reading about that last week. What they're getting, what they can get in Paris, somebody that has a basic flat. But anyway, you talk about politics. How political are the Olympics in France? Because what they cost, I'd never want them to come to Canada again. I don't see the point when you attach the cost to it. Is that an issue?
Okay, it is an issue, and this is where it really gets fun in France. And when I tell you this story, you will say to yourself, that can only happen in France.
Okay.
So what they've tried to do, I don't know if you're up on this, but they're trying to do the opening where they're going to float all of the participants and their coaches, which is some 15,000 people, along the Seine, which is the river in Paris. Right. But then, if that works out, great. But then what they also want to do is have some swimming events in the Seine.
Ew.
Now, before I go any further, please understand that it has been illegal, not discouraged, illegal to swim in the Seine since 1923.
Wow.
That's how polluted this river is.
Yeah.
All right. So that's just for a little bit of context. So to your point,
like
Fred,
Howard's shower.
All right. Come on, but stay on subject here.
To your point, Fred, they have put 1 billion euros into freshening up the bay, freshening up the Seine. And that's where, yes, the people have been protesting. Everybody's having a tough time here in France. So there's been huge protests, $1 billion. And then it happens to be a very wet year. So a lot of raw sewage has been floating up to the top. Because, you know, one thing or another, and it's been difficult to manage. But yet they still They still are going on that it's going to be okay for the swimmers. Some of the athletes have threatened to pull out if they have to swim in the Seine. So the mayor of Paris came out and said, and I think her name is Anne Hidalgo, something like that. She said, I am so confident that the water has been purified to the tune of $1 billion. I am going to go for a swim in the Seine myself on June the 23rd.
Wow.
And Emmanuel Macron heard this and said, that is a great idea. I will join you. This is where it gets really fun, because only in France do the protests take this kind of creativity. Some guy has come up with an idea that we will all take a dump in the Seine on the 23rd so that all of the feces float down to where these two people are having a swim. Wait, it gets better. Another protest bandit and brainiac has come up with an app. The Seine is 481 kilometers long, and he's come up with an app that will tell you where you're shitting in the Seine and when it will arrive in Paris.
That's brilliant.
That is.
It's fantastic.
That's so good.
So if you're this far away, you need to shit in the Seine on the 21st so that your little poo bouquet gets to Paris. Your little poo present makes it to Paris on the 23rd.
That's
so
brilliant.
Then she comes out and says, oh, wait, I'm not going to do it on the 23rd. I'll do it on the 30th instead. So, again, not really understanding that if you give a date to it,
the people
will figure. Anyway, it's on and on here.
I love that
this
story.
This is the kind of fun that we have.
That's my favorite Olympic story ever. That's fucking wild. All right, Jeffrey and Jeff and Julie, his wife, do a lovely podcast. We're proud to be part of the production. Jeff and Julie moved to France in a global pandemic. As always, I think I saw the other day when I was doing something on the server that you just passed episode like 120-something.
Yeah, this is 120 that's on right now, yep.
Fantastic. And a new episode every Friday. Great seeing you, my friend.
And thanks to you guys for the platform. Cheers, boys. Good to see you.
All right, Jeffrey.
All right, see you,
thanks
Jeff.
For doing it a little early today. Appreciate you. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I'm going to go back to bed now.
Well, I think it's funny. Freddie and I are sitting here drinking coffee, and I just noticed you're having a glass of wine.
Of course.
Of course, exactly.
Nice.
All right, buddy. Take care.
France.
Is France. All right.
All right. A bientôt.
A bientôt. Hasta luego, mi amigo.
Okay.
All right, let's get Dan Duran back here. But while we're doing that, let's take care of a little business, Frederick.
Well, the Boston Celtics were the heavy favorite to win the NBA championship. They did it last night in 5 games. Their 18th championship, which sets an NBA record. They surpassed the Lakers. They were tied at 17. And tonight, it's the Oilers at the Panthers. Panthers heavily favored to win this game. They were heavily favored to win the series, and they probably will. Game 5, Panthers can win it at home. Hey, whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sports book, to their fully loaded casino and race book, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. That is Bodog.
Yeah, 18, a record 18 NBA championships. It's pretty cool.
Still nowhere near the Habs 24. Crazy, eh?
Is that the biggest in sports, you think?
Oh, yeah, by far. Oh, what, the Yankees might be up there as well.
Let me tell you something about a little thing called boron, you know? I've mentioned already this week that it's in everything. I think there's probably some boron in us. The deal is boron1.com is a company, a junior mining company that is actually making its own news. In fact, if you want to go to the latest news section of boron1.com, you'll see that they are updating it quite a bit now, that the project they've been working on for years is about to get to the point that very few junior mining companies ever do. Like 1 in 1,000 ever get to the point where they're actually producing and taking that mineral out of the ground, and they're about to in Serbia. Find out more about it, and hey, maybe you have your Sherpa have a look. Maybe you have our Sherpa have a look. But again, Freddie and I, they support us. We just want you to have a look at their company, and you know, we're not responsible for any stock movements. You know, we're just two guys talking about boron, for crying out loud. Go to Boron One and find it out. Find it out at boron1.com.
I can't give you paradise.
This is a song by a Canadian songwriter named Gordy Sampson. And this song became a huge hit for a country music star whose name escapes me. But yeah, he's one of those guys. He actually, Gordy is a guy I met through Kim Stockton. What was her name? Kids, thank you. Well, only a woman I've, you know, worked with, Kim Stockwood, who's a big kind of big music star in Canada. Anyway, I met him. And a great guy. I got to see him play a couple times and found out that he co-wrote Jesus Take the Wheel by Carrie Underwood. And I remember saying to him, I said, was that, I bet you that was pretty good for you. He goes, yeah, I built this house. anyway, Dan Duran. Speaking of residuals, Dan Duran is here.
Yes, I'm back. Happy to be back. I'm going to take a jump on the lake behind me, but not the Seine. The lake is beautiful, crystal clear.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get in there.
I think we've all three of us now have been to Paris. I was the last to get there. I went with ex-wife Randy a couple years ago, went to visit Lumby, but we were in Paris for a couple years, Randy, a couple days, Randy and I. And one afternoon we were, and we did all the Eiffel Tower, and then that same day we took a ride on the Seine, and it was cool. You know, it's just a quick tour, probably 40 minutes, just a little around the city, and yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I was there a long time ago. I really enjoyed Paris, but there was a lot of dog shit on the sidewalks, I noticed. I don't know if you noticed that when you were there. And it was weird, because by the evening, there was dog shit everywhere. People just didn't pick up the dog shit. And by the morning, it's all gone. So the city workers come and got rid of it. I don't know if they've changed the laws in recent years, but that was one takeaway. A little unsettling. You had to watch where you were walking.
Yeah, bizarre. I did not notice the dog shit.
But other than that, I really enjoyed Paris. Paris, I call it.
Paris. Do you, is that what you call it? Mm-hmm. I had COVID there. I got COVID.
Oh.
You guys wouldn't remember that, but I got COVID. I came down with it probably like our second day, and it wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt okay, but like it was like a bad cold with a scratchy throat. And I remember about the third day, the day before we were going to go visit Jeff, I just sent him a note, and I said, dude, I got kind of like, I'm pretty sure I have COVID. I hadn't tested myself. But, you know, I'd understand if you don't want us to come and hang out with you guys for a week. And he's like, nah. See, his response was so typical of Lumby, because, nah, everyone's had COVID. Come on. And I was sick, not terribly so, but kind of medium sick the entire time I was at his place.
I just read a piece this morning that in Ontario, there's been, I don't know, dramatic, but like a bump in COVID cases in recent weeks. And I just sort of buried in the paper, and I thought, isn't that amusing, you know, what it was and now what it is?
Yeah.
Just the evolution of a disease, so to speak, getting around it, you know?
I was watching a comedian I like named Nate Bargatze. I've mentioned him on the show, and I was watching an old stand-up special of his from 2020 or 2021, probably 21, and he's doing it outdoors. And people have there's probably maybe 100 people in the audience, but they're all socially distanced at tables. Everyone's wearing masks. And it's kind of weird, almost like it happens so quickly when it's in our rearview mirror that it's like almost nostalgic. So you're like, oh, yeah, I remember we all walked around with masks on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just did it. We just, as human beings, we all went, OK, this is what we're doing now. And we did it. Mm-hmm.
And according to all the brilliant people, there was no need for it back then. There was absolutely no need for it, because we have all the answers now. So we didn't need to do that, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene, who went to like grade 8 at a one-room schoolhouse in Bug Tussle Asswipe, is questioning a guy that's been fighting. He's one of the leading virologists on the planet for six decades, but she doesn't want to call him doctor because her daddy once, you know, whooped her.
in retrospect, we should be all glad that we did take the measures we did, or we could be in a much different situation now.
All right. Well, let's get to it. It's we're doing a little shorter show today so that Grandpa Howie can go take
shorter show.
Okay. Okay. All right, Dan Duran Tourette's. Shorter show.
Shorter show.
So shorter Grandpa show. Can participate in a golf outing. In the meantime.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low. Huh. Dan Duran, the anchorman, comes and asks for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here, he's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Lakeside, where I see it's not raining. Here in Toronto, it is like a torrential downpour. Apparently, wow. I know, yeah.
Wow.
It's dark, cloudy, because it's 1,000 degrees. Here's movie Anchorman and all-around handyman, Dan Duran.
Oh, we could talk about the June 27th Trump-Biden debate and whether Trump will show, or we could talk about another one of his crime circle, Bannon going to jail, or we could talk about another one of his crime circle, Giuliani screwing up his bankruptcy. But instead, let's talk about how the real rich and famous live. That would be billionaire Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and his fiance Lauren Sanchez. They've been spotting living it up in the island of Mykonos in Greece, Greek island. And that's where he's parked his big yacht, Cora, on the leeward side of the island. Now, that would be his super yacht, a colossal triple-mast schooner stretching over 400 feet in length, which costs a reported $500 million to build. But their helicopter is kept on their support boat, which is a $75 million boat that holds 45 people. That's where all they keep the toys, the helicopters, the speedboats, and all the other water toys. So apparently what they do is they fly on and off this boat with their helicopter to Mykonos, for dinner and the rest, and then fly on back. And wherever else they feel like flying to. Their son just graduated, so they flew 100 miles away to Hydra to celebrate a dinner there. Nice. Living a different life entirely.
Just think about that. An American, because he's an American football field, with the end zones is 120 yards, 360 feet. Just imagine that. And that yacht is what? Over 400 feet, you said?
Yeah.
Like 400 feet. Why do you need that space on the water? Like, it's crazy.
Well, I also wonder, if you're getting a 400-foot yacht and it doesn't come with space for your helicopter, is it really all that good?
Wow.
Well, I think you guys may not remember this, but there was a big billionaire type dude in Mexico. Do you remember the story? And I said they shut down this little par 3
yes.
driving range because it's just what you described, Dan. They stay on the yacht, and you could see everyone in the beach that day were like, oh, that's the so-and-so yacht. And somehow people had looked up the yacht. It was massive. But he helicoptered over to where we were. That's how they didn't. They didn't boat to shore, Dan. That's where the little people. They helicoptered to shore and landed right near where I was staying. But that yacht apparently came with helicopter facilities.
Wow.
Yeah. 400 feet long, it could come with jet plane facilities. It could actually have a deck where you could land a plane on.
Well, the other thing that you said, too, that's interesting to me is that, someone like, hey, Jeff, what's that other boat for? Oh, that's my helicopter. That's my helicopter boat. Oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
Back to your lead-in, I keep hearing this, Trump is going to show up. Why would Trump not show up to that debate? Of course he's going to show up at that, and he's going to turn it into a circus, and he's going to try to...
Because the rules, have you not seen the rules? They're going to make sure he shuts his face, and so there are these rules in place that
when's
he's going
to... that ever worked?
I know.
I know. Yeah. I know they're going to shut his microphone off, right? If you're not talking, your microphone's off, but he'll still turn it into a circus on some level, and when he is speaking, it's all going to be cognitive attacks on Biden. It's not going to be about issues, policy. His sole purpose will be to make Biden look old and decrepit.
Well, I will say this: it will if he goes through with it. When is the date, Dan? Is it
like June 27th? But also, there's no audience there, right? So
no audience.
Doesn't get that hit.
Yeah, but there'll be one on the telly. I bet it sets records for debates.
I was going to say it's must see TV.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you guys could see what's going on here on the Queensway, because it's like, how will I know if there's a Lake Ontario tsunami?
I think you're fine. I don't think there's going to be a Lake Ontario tsunami.
Well, I don't know, Dan. It's looking pretty grim out there. Right
you're
now.
Pretty you're on high ground, though. You're up from the lake. Even if there was a tsunami, you'd yes. be high enough.
Okay,
you'd,
good.
Yeah, but there's yeah, no. Yeah. Is there a fault that runs under Lake Ontario?
There's a fault somewhere around here, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that big of a deal. There's other parts of our country that should be a little bit more prepared than they are.
I don't know why
Vancouver on the West Coast.
I don't know why Vancouver just doesn't buy no fault insurance. Come on.
See, that's a,
figure it
that's
out.
A
tell us.
Joke right there. Yeah.
That's a
yeah.
comedy, Dan. That's
it. That's a comedy.
Just
yeah.
so you know, I don't always stand have up to, for it. I don't always have to do poop in the shower bits, okay, Dan?
Yeah, you go for more intellectual humor, don't you?
By the way, speaking of that, maybe we should put one final point on that particular incident. By the way, did you hear that one emailer, Tanya, said Fred seemed pretty judgy for a guy that shit the bed in the Dominican? Remember that? Remember that incident,
yeah,
Dan?
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
Where was he woke up in the middle of the night and got out of bed and then slid off his shitty sheets to get to the bathroom not in time, right? Is that kind of how it worked?
Well, I woke up with the rumbly stomach and then I thought I got to go to the bathroom and again, as I exerted myself to get up out of bed, I couldn't control it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened.
But during my retelling of my incident, he seemed pretty high and mighty. And I wished,
I
want to
hear
the
tape.
You were poking all kinds of holes and making all kinds of assumptions about my...
I agree with Fred on this one. That I think that's a higher level what you've done in the shower.
Wait a second. You're in bed with your wife?
Really?
Wait a second. You're in bed with your wife and you shit the sheets? You think that's less...
Well,
that's
just
less
a little tiny bit that wiped off on the sheet compared
to
you.
Little, wait, like, no, 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 Dan. No, no. Dan, I know you like to be on Team Fred from time to time, but in this particular case, he took a dump in the bed and his wife had to clean it up. You think that's better than one man
alone? Oh, wait a minute. No, I didn't realize that. I thought it was just a little smear.
No.
Okay, I'm on Howard's side on this one.
Did you
actually leave like a big, huge puddle kind of on the bed?
Not a puddle, but I'd say... Anyway, like 1 minute ago, I was going to say, listen, it's me, and even I have to agree with Howard that mine was probably worse than his. I mean, his was contained and went right down the drain.
That's
and
right.
No, mine was probably a 4 to 5 inch circle.
Yeah, other human being was involved in the cleanup process.
All right. Okay. Well,
All right. Yeah. Listen, go back to struggling with the language.
the circle of shame.
And one, the final word today goes to one of our favorite contributors. Here's what Jennifer Kelly had to say.
Hi, guys. Oh, my goodness. It's been a minute. I don't know where the weeks have gone. This whole not having a Thursday show with emails has got me all discombobulated. And then I just heard that tomorrow is the last show, so I needed to send a message. Just wanted to tell you, I was at the Sobeys Mall the other day, and I saw a Tesla, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I'm having a Howard sighting. But it wasn't you. Anyway, for the first time ever, I have to say, I actually fast-forwarded through a section, and it was, Howard, your shower story. I couldn't do it. I tried. Didn't need that image. Fast-forwarded. But I'm sorry that that happened to you. Anyway, it's been great lately, guys. I'm glad you're enjoying the summer, and yeah, keep it up. Talk to you soon.
Well, I wonder if she's going to fast-forward through this last section. Okay. All right. Thanks to Jeff Lumby, and thanks, everyone. Appreciate you guys going a little early for me today. And we're off tomorrow, back next Monday. Have a great, long, long Humble and Fred weekend.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. For contests and comments, we read all of our emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. And if you'd help us out, we'd appreciate it. Subscribe, maybe share an episode, and rating helps as well. For Humble and Fred from the Jeff Lewis Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, Charter Show, stay cool and enjoy every goddamn day. The jigsaw jazz and the get fresh flow, pulling out jobs and jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone, bottles and cans, and just clap your hands, or just clap your hands.